Mr. Tibbs skimmed into the ballroom. Butlers don't walk, they skim over the ground, followed by a whole army of footmen. The footmen all wore knee breeches and every one of them displayed beautifully rounded calves and ankles.
"Push the grand piano into the centre of the room,"
Mr. Tibbs whispered. Butlers never raise their voices above the softest whisper. Four footmen move the piano.
"Now fetch a large chest of drawers and put it on top of the piano,"
Mr. Tibbs whispered. Three other footmen fetched a very fine Chippendale mahogany chest of drawers and placed it on top of the piano.
"That will be his chair. It is exactly 8 feet off the ground. Now we shall make a table upon which this gentleman may eat his breakfast in comfort. Fetch me four very tall grandfather clocks. Let each clock be 12 feet high."
16 footmen spread out around the palace to find the clocks. They required four footmen to each one.
"Place the four clocks in a rectangle, 8 feet by four, alongside the grand piano."
The footman did so.
"Now fetch me the young prince's ping-pong table."
The ping-pong table was carried in.
"Now place the ping-pong table on top of the four grandfather clocks."
To manage this, the footman had to stand on step ladders. Mr. Tibbs stood back to survey the new furniture.
"Not in the classic style, but it will have to do."
He gave orders that a damask tablecloth should be draped over the ping-pong table. At this point, Mr. Tibbs was seen to hesitate. The footmen all stared at him aghast. Butlers never hesitate. It is their job to be totally decisive at all times. But Mr. Tibbs didn't hesitate for long.
"Tell the head gardener that I require immediately a brand new unused garden fork and also a spade. And for a knife we shall use the great sword hanging on the wall in the morning room. But clean the sword well first. It was last used to cut off the head of King Charles I, and there may still be a little dried blood on the blade."
Mr. Tibbs stood near the centre of the ballroom, casting his expert butler's eye over the scene. Had he forgotten anything? He certainly had. What about a coffee cup for the large gentleman?
"Fetch me the biggest jug you could find in the kitchen."
So much for the giant. Mr. Tibbs then had the footman move a small, delicate table and two chairs alongside the giant's table. This was for the Queen and for Sophie. All these arrangements were only just completed when the Queen, now fully dressed in a trim skirt and cashmere cardigan, entered the ballroom holding Sophie by the hand. A pretty blue dress that had once belonged to a little princess had been found for Sophie, and to make her look prettier still, the Queen had picked up a superb sapphire brooch from her dressing table and had pinned it onto the left side of Sophie's chest. The big friendly giant followed behind them, but he had an awful job getting through the door. He had to squeeze through on his hands and knees, with two footmen pushing him from behind and two pulling him from the front. He had removed his black cloak and got rid of his trumpet, and was now wearing his ordinary simple clothes. As he walked across the ballroom, he failed to notice an enormous crystal chandelier. Crash went his head. A shower of glass fell upon the poor BFG.
"Gunghammers and Bogswinkles! What was that?"
"It was Louis the 15th," the Queen said, looking slightly put out. "He's never been in a house before," Sophie said. Mr. Tibbs directed four footmen to clear up the mess. Then he indicated to the giant that he should sit himself on top of the chest of drawers on top of the grand piano.
"What a fizz-whizzing, flush-bunking seat! Oh, he is going to be bug as a snuck in a rug up here."
"Does he always speak like that?" the Queen asked. "Quite often." The BFG sat down on the chest of drawers piano and gazed in wonder around the great ballroom.
"By gumdrops, what a spliffling wopsy room he is in. It is so gigantuous, I is needing bicirculars and telescopes to see what is going on at the other end."
Footmen arrived carrying silver trays with fried eggs, bacon, sausages and fried potatoes. At this point, Mr. Tibbs suddenly realised that in order to serve the BFG, he would have to climb to the top of one of the tall stepladders, balancing a huge warm plate on the palm of one hand and holding a gigantic silver coffee pot in the other. A normal man would have flinched at the thought of it. But good butlers never flinch. Up he went, up and up and up, while the Queen and Sophie watched him with great interest. It is possible they were both secretly hoping he would lose his balance and go crashing to the floor, but good butlers never crash. At the top of the ladder, Mr. Tibbs poured the BFG's coffee and placed the enormous plate before him. On the plate were 8 eggs, 12 sausages, 16 rashers of bacon and a heap of fried potatoes.
What is this, please, Your Majesty?
The BFG asked, peering down at the Queen. He has never eaten anything except snotcumbers before in his life, Sophie explained. They taste revolting. They don't seem to have stunted his growth, the Queen said. The BFG grabbed the garden spade and scooped up all the eggs, sausages, bacon and potatoes in one go and shoveled them into his enormous mouth.
By goggles! This stuff is making snozcumbers taste like swatch collop.
Tibbs, the Queen said, showing true regal hospitality, fetch the gentleman another 12 fried eggs and 12 sausages. Mr. Tibbs swam out of the room muttering unspeakable words to himself and wiping his brow with a white handkerchief. The BFG lifted the huge jug and took a swallow.
Ouch!
He cried, blowing a mouthful across the ballroom.
Oh, please! What is this horrible swig spill I is drinking, Magister?
It's coffee, the Queen told him. Freshly roasted.
Oh, it's filthsome! Where is the frobscottle?
The what?
A delumptuous fizzy frobscottle. Everyone must be drinking frobscottle with breakfast, Magister. Then we can all be whiz-popping happily together afterwards.
What does he mean? The Queen said, frowning at Sophie. What is whiz-popping? Sophie kept a very straight face. BFG, there is no frobscottle here, and whiz-popping is strictly forbidden.
What? No frobscottle? No whiz-popping? No glumptious music? No boom, boom, boom?
Absolutely not, Sophie told him firmly. If he wants to sing, please don't stop him, the Queen said. He doesn't want to sing, Sophie said. He said he wants to make music. Shall I send for a violin? No, Your Majesty. He's only joking. A sly little smile crossed the BFG's face.
Listen,
he said, peering down at Sophie.
If they isn't having any frobscottle here in the palace, I can still go whiz-popping perfectly well without it if I is trying hard enough.
No, don't. You're not to. I beg you. Music is very good for the digestion, the Queen said. When I'm up in Scotland, they play the bagpipes outside the window while I'm eating. Do play something.
I has Her Majesty's permission,
cried the BFG, and all at once he let fly with a whiz-popper that sounded as though a bomb had exploded in the room. The Queen jumped.
Whoopee! That is better than bagelpipes, is it not, Magister?
It took the Queen a few seconds to get over the shock. I prefer the bagpipes, she said, but she couldn't stop herself smiling. During the next 20 minutes, a whole relay of footmen were kept busy hurrying to and fro from the kitchen, carrying third helpings and fourth helpings and fifth helpings of fried egg and sausages for the ravenous and delighted BFG. While all this was going on, Sophie had been telling the Queen everything, absolutely everything, about her visit to Giant Country. The Queen listened, appalled. When Sophie had finished, the Queen looked up at the BFG, who was sitting high above her. He was now eating a sponge cake. Big friendly giant. Last night, those man-eating brutes came to England. Can you remember where they went the night before? The BFG put a whole round sponge cake into his mouth and chewed it slowly while he thought about this question.
Yes, Magister. I do think I is remembering where they said they was going the night before last. They was galloping off to Sweden for the Sweden sour taste.
Fetch me a telephone, the Queen commanded. Mr. Tibbs placed the instrument on the table. The Queen lifted the receiver. Get me the King of Sweden, she said. Good morning, the Queen said. Is everything all right in Sweden?
Everything is terrible,
the King of Sweden answered.
There is panic in the capital. 2 nights ago, 26 of my loyal subjects disappeared. My whole country is in a panic.
Your 26 loyal subjects were all eaten by giants. Apparently, they like the taste of Swedes.
Why do they like the taste of Swedes?
The king asked. Because the Swedes of Sweden have a sweet and sour taste, the queen said.
I don't know what you're talking about,
the king said, growing testy.
It's hardly a joking matter when one's loyal subjects are being eaten like a popcorn.
They've eaten mine as well.
Who's they, for heaven's sake?
The king asked. Giants, the queen said.
Look here. Are you feeling all right?
It's been a rough morning. First I had a horrid nightmare, then the maid dropped my breakfast, and now I've got a giant on the piano.
You need a doctor, quick.
I'll be all right, the queen said. I must go now. Thanks for your help. She replaced the receiver. That proves it, she said, looking up at the BFG. Your story is apparently quite true. Summon the head of the army and the head of the air force immediately. The head of the army and the head of the air force stood at attention beside the Queen's breakfast table. Sophie was still in her seat, and the BFG was still high up on his crazy perch. It took the Queen only 5 minutes to explain the situation to the military men.
Well, I knew there was something like this going on, Your Majesty,
the head of the army said.
For the last 10 years, we've been getting reports from nearly every country in the world about people disappearing mysteriously in the night.
The Queen said, what time is it? 10 a.m. In 8 hours, those 9 bloodthirsty brutes will be galloping off to gobble up another couple of dozen unfortunate wretches. They have to be stopped. We must act fast.
Well, bomb the blighters,
shouted the head of the Air Force. I do not approve of murder, the Queen said.
But they are murderers themselves,
cried the head of the army. That is no reason why we should follow their example. 2 wrongs don't make a right.
And 2 rights don't make a left,
cried the BFG. We must bring them back alive.
How?
Said the 2 military men together.
Wait. Hold your horseflies. Keep your skirts on. I think I has the answer to the maiden's hair.
Let him speak, the Queen said.
Every afternoon, all these giants is in the land of Noddy.
I can't understand a word this fellow's saying,
the head of the army snapped. He means the land of Nod, Sophie said. It's pretty obvious.
Exactly. Every afternoon, all these 9 giants is lying on the ground, snoozling away in a very deep sleep.
Well, go on,
they said.
So what?
So, what you soldiers has to do is to creep up to the giants while they is still in the land of Noddy and tie their arms and legs with mighty ropes and chains.
Brilliant, the Queen said.
Well, that's all very well,
said the head of the army.
Well, how do we get the brutes back here? We can't load 50-foot giants onto trucks. Shoot them on the spot. That's what I say.
The BFG looked down from his lofty perch and said, this time to the head of the Air Force,
you is having belly poppers, is you not? Is he being rude?
The head of the Air Force said. He means helicopters, Sophie told him.
Of course we have helicopters. Whopsy big belly poppers. Very big ones,
the head of the Air Force said proudly.
But no helicopter is big enough to get a giant like that inside. You do not put him inside,
the BFG said.
You sling him underneath the belly of your belly popper and carry him like a portito. Like a what?
Said the head of the Air Force. Like a torpedo, Sophie said. Could you do that, Air Marshal? The Queen asked.
Well, I suppose we could.
Then get cracking, the Queen said. You'll need 9 helicopters, 1 for each giant.
Well, where is this place?
The Air Force man said to the BFG.
I presume you can pinpoint it on the map. Pinpoint? Map? Is this Air Force been talking slush bungle?
The Air Marshal's face turned the colour of a ripe plum. He was not used to being told he was talking slush bungle. The Queen, with her usual admirable tact and good sense, came to the rescue.
BFG, she said, can you tell us more or less where this giant country is?
No, Magister. Not on my Nelly.
Oh, well, they were jiggered,
cried the Army General.
This is ridiculous,
cried the Air Marshal.
You must not be giving up so easy,
the BFG said calmly.
The first titchy bobstickle you meet, and you begin shouting you is biff-squiggled.
The Army General was no more used to being insulted than the Air Marshal. His face began to swell with fury, and his cheeks blew out until they looked like 2 huge ripe tomatoes.
Your Majesty, we are dealing with a lunatic.
The Queen, who was used to the tantrums of her senior officials, ignored him completely.
BFG, she said, would you please tell these rather dim-witted characters exactly what to do?
A pleasure, Magister. Now, listen to me carefully, you 2 boot bogglers.
The military men began to twitch, but they stayed put.
I is not having the foggiest idea where giant country is in the world. But I is always able to gallop there. So all you is having to do is this. Put your 9 big belly hoppers up in the air and let them follow me as I is galloping along. If we is leaving now, we will be arriving just as the giants is having their afternoon snozzle.
Splendid, said the Queen. Then turning to the 2 military men, she said, prepare to leave immediately.
The head of the army, who was feeling pretty miffed by the whole business, said,
Well, that's all very well, Your Majesty. What are we going to do with the blighters once we've got them back?
Don't you worry about that, the Queen told him. Hurry up now. Off you go.
The BFG got down from his high chair. He picked Sophie up in his fingers. He swiveled his huge right ear until it was parallel with the ground. Then he placed Sophie gently inside it. The Queen smiled.
You really are rather a wonderful giant, she said.
Magister, I is wishing to ask you a very special thing from you.
What is it?
Could I please bring back here in the belly poppers all my collection of dreams? They is taking me years and years to collect, and I is not wanting to lose them.
Why, of course, the Queen said. I wish you a safe journey.
The BFG had never before travelled in broad daylight. He hadn't dared to. But this was different. Now he was doing it for the Queen of England herself, and he was frightened of nobody. As he galloped across the British Isles with the helicopters thundering above him, people stood and gaped and wondered what on earth was going on.
Be careful to hang on tight. We is going fast as a fizzle crump.
The BFG changed into his famous top gear, and all at once he began to fly forward as though there were springs in his legs and rockets in his toes. He went skimming over the earth like some magical hop, skip and jumper, with his feet hardly ever touching the ground. Sophie had to crouch low in the crevice of his ear to save herself from being swept clean away. The 9 pilots in their helicopters suddenly realized they were being left behind. They opened their throttles to full speed, and even then they were only just able to keep up. In the leading machine, the head of the Air Force was sitting beside the pilot. He had a world atlas on his knees. Frantically, he turned the pages of his atlas.
Where the devil are we going?
I have the foggiest idea. The Queen's orders were to follow the giant, and that's exactly what I'm doing.
The pilot was a young Air Force officer with a bushy moustache. He was also quite fearless, and he loved adventure.
It's fun going to new places.
New places?
Shouted the head of the Air Force.
What the blazes do you mean, new places?
Well, this place we're flying over now isn't in the Atlas, is it?
The pilot said, grinning.
You're darn right it isn't in the Atlas,
cried the head of the Air Force.
We've flown clear off the last page.
I expect that old giant knows where he's going,
the young pilot said.
He's leading us to disaster,
cried the head of the Air Force. He was shaking with fear. In the seat beside him sat the head of the army, who was even more terrified.
You don't mean to tell me we've gone right off the Atlas,
That's exactly what I'm telling you,
cried the Air Force man.
Look for yourself. Here's the very last map in the whole Flaming Atlas. We went off that over an hour ago.
He turned the page. As in all atlases, there were now two completely blank pages at the very end.
So now we must be somewhere here,
he said, putting a finger on one of the blank pages. The young pilot was still grinning broadly. He said to them,
that's why they always put two blank pages at the back of the atlas. They're for new countries. You're meant to fill them in yourself.
The head of the Air Force glanced down at the ground below.
Just look at this godforsaken desert! All the trees are dead and all the rocks are blue.
The giant has stopped,
the young pilot said.
He's waving us down.
All nine helicopters landed safely on the great yellow wasteland. Then each of them lowered a ramp from its belly. Nine jeeps, one from each helicopter, were driven down the ramps. Each jeep contained six soldiers and a vast quantity of thick rope and heavy chains.
Well, I don't see any giant,
the head of the army said.
The giant is all just out of sight over there. But if you was taking these slosh-buckling, noisy belly-poppers any closer, all the giants is waking up at once, and then pop goes the weasel.
Oh, so you want us to proceed by jeep?
The head of the army said.
Yes, but you must all be very, very hushy quiet. No roaring of motors, no shouting, no mucking about, no piggery-jokery.
The BFG, with Sophie still in his ear, trotted forward and the jeeps followed close behind. Suddenly, the most dreadful rumbling noise was heard by everyone. The head of the army went pea green in the face.
Well, those are guns. Come on, turn back, the lot of you.
Pigs, piffle. Those noises is not guns.
Of course they're guns,
shouted the head of the army.
I am a military man and I know a gun when I hear one.
Those is just the giants snortling in their sleep. I is a giant, and I know a giant snortle when I is hearing one.
Oh, you quite sure?
The army man said anxiously.
Positive.
Proceed cautiously,
the army man ordered. They all moved on. Then they saw them. Even at a distance, they were enough to scare the daylights out of the soldiers. But when they got close and saw what the giants really looked like, they began to sweat with fear. Nine fearsome, ugly, half-naked, 50-feet-long brutes lay sprawled over the ground in various grotesque attitudes of sleep, and the sound of their snoring was indeed like gunfire in a battle. The BFG raised a hand. The jeeps all stopped. The soldiers got out.
What happens if one of them wakes up?
Whispered the head of the army, his knees knocking together from fear.
If any one of them is waking up, he will gobble you down before you can say Nackjive.
The BFG answered, grinning hugely.
Me is the only one that won't be gobbled up, because giants is never eating giants. Me and Sophie is the only safe ones, because I is hiding her if that happens.
The head of the army took several paces to the rear. So did the head of the Air Force. They climbed rather quickly back into their jeep, ready to make a fast getaway if necessary.
Go forward, men,
the head of the army said.
Go on, go forward, do your duty bravely.
The soldiers crept forward with their ropes and chains. All of them were trembling mightily. None dared to speak a word. To give the soldiers their due, they were extremely courageous. There were six well-trained, efficient men working on each giant, and within 10 minutes, eight out of the nine giants had been trussed up like chickens and were still snoring contentedly. The ninth, who happened to be the flesh lump eater, was causing trouble for the soldiers because he was lying with his right arm tucked underneath his enormous body. It was impossible to tie his wrists and arm together without first getting that arm out from underneath him. Very, very cautiously, the six soldiers who were working on the flesh lump eater began to pull at the huge arm, trying to release it. The flesh lump eater opened his tiny piggy black eyes. Suddenly, he saw the soldiers. In a flash, he was sitting up. He looked around him. He saw more soldiers. With a roar, he leapt to his feet. The soldiers, petrified with fear, froze where they were. They had no weapons with them. The head of the army put his jeep into reverse.
Human being!
The flesh lump eater yelled.
What is all you flesh banking rotsome half-baked beads doing in our country?
He made a grab at a soldier and swept him up in his hand.
I is having early suppers today.
He shouted, holding the poor squirming soldier at arm's length and roaring with laughter. Sophie, standing on the palm of the BFG's hand, was watching horror-struck.
Do something! She cried.
Put that human being down!
The flesh lump eater turned and stared at the BFG.
What is you doing here with all these grotty twiglets?
He bellowed. The BFG made a rush at the flesh lump eater, but the colossal 54-foot-high giant simply knocked him over with a flick of his free arm. Sophie fell off the BFG's palm onto the ground. Her mind was racing. She must do something. She must. She must. She remembered the sapphire brooch the queen had pinned onto her chest. Quickly, she undid it. Sophie ran up behind the flesh lump eater. She was holding the brooch between her fingers. When she was right up close to the great naked hairy legs, she rammed the 3-inch-long pin of the brooch as hard as she could into the flesh lump eater's right ankle. It went deep into the flesh and stayed there. The giant gave a roar of pain and jumped high in the air. He dropped the soldier and made a grab for his ankle. The BFG saw his chance.
You was bitten by a snake. I seed it biting you. It was a frightsome poisonous viper. It was a dreadly dangerous windscreen viper.
Save our souls!
Bellowed the flesh lump eater. He flopped to the ground and sat there howling his head off and clutching his ankle with both hands. His fingers felt the brooch.
The teeth of the dreadly viper is still sticking into me. Oh, I is feeling the teeth sticking into my anklet.
The BFG saw his second chance.
We must be getting those viper's teeth out at once. Otherwise you is deader than duck soup. I is helping you.
The BFG knelt down beside the flesh lump eater.
You must grab your anklet very tight with both hands. That will stop the poisonous juices from the venomous viper going up your leg and into your heart.
The flesh lump eater grabbed his ankle with both hands.
Now, close your eyes and grittle your teeth and look up to heaven and say your prayers while I is taking out the teeth of the venomous viper.
The terrified flesh lump eater did exactly as he was told. The BFG signaled for some rope. A soldier rushed it over to him. With both the flesh lump eater's hands gripping his ankle, it was a simple matter for the BFG to tie the ankles and hands together with a tight knot.
There he is,
said the BFG, standing up.
You can look now.
When the flesh lump eater saw that he was trussed up like a turkey, he gave a yell so loud that the heavens trembled. He rolled and he wriggled, he fought and he figgled, he squirmed and he squiggled, but there was not a thing he could do.
Well done, you! Sophie cried.
And well done, you!
Said the BFG, smiling down at the little girl.
You is saving all of our lives.
Will you please get that brooch back for me? It belongs to the Queen.
The BFG pulled the beautiful brooch out of the flesh lump eater's ankle. The flesh lump eater howled. The BFG wiped the pin and handed it back to Sophie. The heads of the army and the air force drove forward once again in their jeep.
Her Majesty will be very pleased with me,
the head of the army said.
I shall probably get a medal. What's the next move?
Now you is all driving over to my cave to load up my bottles of dreams.
While the soldiers were loading the dreams, the BFG and Sophie disappeared over the mountains on a mysterious errand. When they came back, the BFG had a sack the size of a small house slung over his shoulder.
Well, what's that you've got in there?
The head of the army demanded to know.
Curiosity is killing the rat,
the BFG said, and he turned away from the silly man. When he was sure that all his precious dreams had been safely loaded onto the jeeps, the BFG said,
Now we is driving back to the belly poppers and picking up the frightsome giants.
The jeeps drove back to the helicopters. The 50,000 dreams were carried carefully, jar by jar, onto the helicopters. The soldiers climbed back on board, but the BFG and Sophie stayed on the ground. Then they all returned to where the 9 giants were lying. It was a fine sight to see them, these great air machines hovering over the trussed-up giants. It was an even finer sight to see the giants being woken up by the terrific thundering of the engines overhead. And the finest sight of all was to observe those 9 hideous brutes squirming and twisting about on the ground like a mass of mighty snakes as they tried to free themselves from their ropes and chains.
"I is Fleshbunkles!"
roared the flesh-lump eater.
"I is Splitswiggles!"
yelled the child-chewer.
"I is Swatwallet!"
bellowed the bone-cruncher.
"I is Goose-Gruggles!"
howled the man-hugger.
"I is Guzzle-Swiped!"
shouted the meat-dripper.
"I is Fluck-Gungled!"
screamed the maid-masher.
"I is Slopped-Gruggles!"
squawked the gizzard-gulper.
"I is Grud-Squinkle!"
yowled the blood-bottler.
"I is Bop-Muggard!"
screeched the butcher-boy. The 9 giant-carrying helicopters each chose a separate giant and hovered directly over him. Very strong steel hawsers with hooks on the end of them were lowered from the front and rear of each helicopter. The BFG quickly secured the hooks onto the giant's chains, one hook near the legs and the other near the arms. Then, very slowly, the giants were winched up into the air. The giants roared and bellowed, but there was nothing they could do. The BFG, with Sophie once more resting comfortably in his ear, set off at a gallop for England. The helicopters all banked around and followed after him. The giants must have found it an interesting experience. They never stopped bellowing, but their howls were drowned by the noise of the engines. When it began to get dark, the helicopters switched on powerful searchlights and trained them on the galloping giant so as to keep him in sight. They flew right through the night and arrived in England just as dawn was breaking. While the giants were being captured, a tremendous bustle and hustle was going on back home in England. Every earth digger and mechanical contrivance in the country had been mobilized to dig a colossal hole. 10,000 men and 10,000 machines worked ceaselessly through the night under powerful arc lights, and the massive task was completed only just in time. The hole itself was about twice the size of a football field and 500 feet deep. The walls were perpendicular, and engineers had calculated that there was no way a giant could escape once he was put in. Even if all 9 giants were to stand on each other's shoulders, the topmost giant would still be some 50 feet from the top of the hole. The 9 helicopters hovered over the massive pit. The giants, one by one, were lowered to the floor. But they were still trussed up, and now came the tricky business of releasing them from their bonds. Nobody wanted to go down and do this because the moment a giant was freed, he would be sure to turn on the wretched person who had freed him and gobble him up. As usual, the BFG had the answer.
"I has told you before. Giants is never eating giants, so I shall untie them myself."
With thousands of fascinated spectators, including the Queen, peering down into the pit, the BFG was lowered on a rope. One by one, he released the giants. They stood up, stretched their stiffened limbs, and started leaping about in fury.
"Why are they putting us down here in this grub-sweating hole?"
they shouted at the BFG.
"Because you is guzzling human beans,"
the BFG answered.
"In that case,"
the flesh-lump eater bellowed,
"I think we is guzzling you instead."
The BFG grabbed the dangling rope and was hoisted out of the pit just in time. The great bulging sack he had brought back with him from the giant country lay at the top of the pit. "What's in there?" the Queen asked. The BFG pulled out a gigantic black and white striped object the size of a man.
"Snozcumbers. This is the repulsant Snozcumber, Magister. And that is all we is going to give these disgustive giants from now on."
"May I taste it?" the Queen asked.
"Don't, Magister, don't! It is tasting of trog filth and pig squibble."
With that, he tossed the snozcumber down to the giants below.
"There's your supper,"
he shouted. He fished out more snozcumbers from the sack and threw them down. The giants below howled and cursed. The BFG laughed.
"It serves them right, left and center."
What will we feed them on when the snozzcumbers are all used up? The Queen asked him.
Oh, they is never being used up, Magister,
the BFG answered, smiling.
I is also bringing in this sack a whole bungle of snozzcumber plants, which I is giving, with your permission, to the royal gardener to put in the soil. Then we is having an everlasting supply of this repulsant food to feed these thirst-bloody giants on.
What a clever fellow you are, the Queen said.
Every country in the world that had in the past been visited by the foul, man-eating giants sent telegrams of congratulations and thanks to the BFG and to Sophie. Kings and presidents and prime ministers and rulers of every kind showered the enormous giant and the little girl with compliments and thank yous, as well as all sorts of medals and presents. The Queen gave orders that a special house with tremendous high ceilings and enormous doors should immediately be built in Windsor Great Park, next to her own castle, for the BFG to live in, and a pretty little cottage was put up next door for Sophie. The BFG's house was to have a special dream-storing room with hundreds of shelves in it. What is more, he was given the title of the Royal Dreamblower. He was allowed to go galloping off to any place in England on any night of the year to blow his splendid fizz-wizards in through the windows to sleeping children. And letters poured into his house by the million from children begging him to pay them a visit. Meanwhile, tourists from all over the world came flocking to gaze down in wonder at the nine horrendous man-eating giants in the great pit. They came especially at feeding time, when the snozzcumbers were being thrown down by the keeper, and it was a pleasure to listen to the howls and growls coming up from the pit as the giants began to chew upon the filthiest-tasting vegetable on earth. The BFG expressed a wish to learn how to speak properly, and Sophie herself, who loved him as she would a father, volunteered to give him lessons every day. She even taught him how to spell and to write sentences, and he turned out to be a splendid, intelligent pupil. In his spare time, he read books. He became a tremendous reader. He read all of Charles Dickens, whom he no longer called Darl's Chickens, and all of Shakespeare, and literally thousands of other books. He also started to write essays about his own past life. When Sophie read some of them, she said, "These are very good. I think perhaps one day you could become a real writer."
"Oh, I would love that. Do you think I could?"
"I know you could. Why don't you start by writing a book about you and me?"
"Very well. I'll give it a try."
So he did. He worked hard on it. And in the end, he completed it. Rather shyly, he showed it to the Queen. The Queen read it aloud to her grandchildren. Then the Queen said,
"I think we ought to get this book printed properly and published so that other children can read it."
This was arranged. But because the BFG was a very modest giant, he wouldn't put his own name on it. He used somebody else's name instead. But where, you might ask, is this book that the BFG wrote? It's right here. I've just finished reading it to you.